honored to have everybody here, and I can honestly say that these not only are four top-notch educators here tonight, but also these are four people I've become very close friends with. So you, I say that with great pride. Let's go in alphabetical order. First of all, we've got Michael Babinarik here tonight. Michael is or was the 2004 presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Michael is currently, relatively recently, announced his candidacy for the United States House of Representatives from his district in Texas. He's running as a Libertarian, and he is certain that he's going to become the first Libertarian ever elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. Michael is the author of the inspiring book, Good to Be King. He's also probably the thing that Michael always takes the most pride in spite of all of his achievements, Michael probably takes the most pride in his teaching his Constitution class, his 8-hour Constitution class. And he travels around the country. He's been teaching that for years and years, and I understand it is tremendously inspirational. But you can find Michael at his political site is badnarik.org, B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K.org. His Constitution website is www.constitutionpreservation.org. That's constitutionpreservation.org. Let's see, who would be next alphabetically? I just need to think here. Patrick Mooney would be.
This conference has 22 other callers present.
Of the Institute of Unlearning. So the Institute of Unlearning is an online school, basically. Yeah, it consists of, he's got articles on there, he's got a lot of multimedia, but most of which Patrick wrote himself, also a very gifted writer. He's got a lot of multimedia on there. He's got audios. He's got videos. He's got a bunch of links. And Patrick's mission basically is what it says. His mission is to teach people how to unlearn a lot of the crap that we have learned as a function of our conditioning in this very sick culture, to put it bluntly. And after one has unlearned, then one can relearn a whole different way of experiencing the world. So that's
and you did do a very good job of putting it bluntly, I want to say.
Patrick's website is www.unlearning.org, unlearning.org. Michael Rice is with us here tonight. Dr. Michael Rice is the founder and director of Heartland, which is a self-healing center in Missouri. He's the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Why Is This Happening to Me? Again. He is also the author, he is working on a new book, which he's talked to us a couple of times here on this on our TELUS seminar, which sounds very, very exciting. It's entitled, I may get a little bit of this wrong here, but it's entitled The End of Suffering, Rediscovering the Original Aramaic Jesus. And he's you can access that book on his website. His website is www.whyagain.com, that's whyagain.com for Dr. Michael Rice. And
slight adjustment on the title. It's Resurrecting the Original Aramaic Jesus. And on the website, there are just the first two chapters in digital audio files. Anybody can listen to those first two chapters if they want to hear what's happening with that book.
All right. Fantastic. And last but not least, Ms. Gigi Staffney. Gigi is my soul sister. She's a naturopath. She is a master herbalist. She is an iridologist, a natural healer. She works out in the boonies of western Wisconsin. She's got her own kayaking business out there also, which she does not do in the winter, but does do in the summer. And Gigi offers all kinds of neat things out of her center there. She's got tapes. She's got lots of workshops. She's got the kayaking business, all kinds of goodies. And Gigi, I don't think you've got a website, but you have an 800 number, or at least a phone number you can give people who want to check you out and check out what you're doing. Do you not?
Yes, I do.
Why don't you give us that now, as long as we're plugging everybody?
Sure. It's 715-967-2300.
Okay, and we'll get that at the end of the call.
Okay,
also.
Thank you.
All right. Well, okay, let's get rolling here. I just want to say very briefly, I'm going to get out of the way here tonight and just let my guests kind of take this thing over here tonight, but just very, very briefly here tonight, we're going to be talking about how to cope with fear and panic in a world of crisis and change. And certainly this is very relevant on the basis of all the wild things that are happening in the world right now. And we're also going to be putting a different spin on this. What you hear tonight is not going to be what you hear in the mainstream media, needless to say. And what you hear tonight is also, it's not even going to be similar to most of what you hear on the internet, because there's an awful lot of negativity on the internet. There's an awful lot of doomsday stuff going on the internet. And we're going to be putting a different spin on this tonight. We're going to be putting more of a positive spin on this, and we're going to be putting a spin which relates to taking these incredibly huge challenges and turning them into opportunities, basically, which is a spiritual way of looking at this, and at least that's my way of putting it. And I just want to say to anyone who comes away from this or who thinks they're hearing that for some reason, because we're spinning this differently or spinning this more positively, that somehow we're insensitive to Katrina, we're insensitive to the horrible disaster in the city of New Orleans, that we don't understand those things, that we're just hardened souls. Let me assure you that that's not the case. That is not the case. I had a guy on last Tuesday night's call just go off on me because of the way that I was spinning this. That's not the case. We're very feeling people. We're very caring people. We're all in the healing profession, so we've got to be people who care. And if that's the way you hear this, then you're missing the point. You're just not getting it. I can assure you that everybody on my panel here tonight, these are positive people. You're not going to hear any complaining tonight. You're not going to hear any doomsday tonight. You're not going to hear any paranoia tonight. You're not going to hear any, they're coming to get us, let's load our guns. You're not going to be hearing any of that here tonight. You're going to be hearing something very, very different. So, that really is the purpose of this. So, let's get started, guys, with... Let's just talk a little bit about what the heck is going on in the world today, and I'd be interested in hearing some of your perspectives on this. We've got the terrible disaster in New Orleans with Katrina, and in terms of giving this some perspective, what the heck's going on here, guys? We hear doomsday scenarios, we hear end time scenarios, we hear the great shift of the ages, we hear about the New World Order. This is the end of the world, the year 2012, on and on and on, and what we're experiencing now is the birth of that, or the beginning of that, or maybe even is it actually happening. What do you guys think about this in terms of what's happening here? And anybody who wants to go, there's no order here tonight, just jump on out and tell us what you think.
I'll jump out. It's Michael Rice and Michael Bednarik. Nice to be on the panel with you again, the same Patrick. I enjoyed that last panel that we did, and My starting point, Jack, would be to say that I was on a call on Tuesday night and a fellow who went off on me, and I think that the difference that someone who's in the position he was in doesn't get is that we're creators, and as creators, we set up what happens, and as we pretend that we're not responsible for what we create, then we can't change cause, and so the effect keeps happening, growing, becoming more intense, and as on that last call that Patrick and with Michael, the unlearning process, the forgiveness process is to go to cause and to start to undo cause, and when you start to take responsibility and undo cause, it doesn't mean you're callous to the effect that's happened, because there are some horrendous effects that are happening in the world. And so being able to address both, to have the compassion, the space of support for those who are in the middle of a muddle and in the middle of some of the intense happenings that are going on in the world, but at the same time, to be able to ourselves to take responsibility and to support others, looking at what's my part in this, what's my responsibility, and how do I change the level of cause? Now, of course, if you don't believe you're a creative being, then all of that's irrelevant, because you're just a victim and the world just comes and bites you and, oh, well, that's the way it goes. And it's just not the way it is. We are creative beings. And one of the tongue-in-cheek lines I like to deliver in my workshops often is, you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the one that was there every time, the only one that was there every time. And the, again, experience has got to do with the creative aspect of the part of us we hide from ourselves. And it can be pretty traumatic and pretty painful to bring that painful part forward. But until we do, the world will keep serving its purpose, and that is to kick us right square in the limitation till we finally get it. We're playing here. We're setting up what's happening. And it's time for us to change.
Okay.
I'd like to jump in there, Jack.
Sure, Patrick, go ahead.
Well, first I'd like to say happy Thor's Day to my co-panelists, to you, Jack, to you, Zoe, and to everyone else that's listening there.
That is T-H-O-R-S Day.
Yes, Thor.
Okay, I gotcha.
Right. Most of our days are named after the planets and the ancient gods, and I like to emphasize that a lot. But basically, my take on it is basically to reiterate everything Michael was saying, and that is oftentimes when you promote a show, you said how to be sane in an insane world. And I was reflecting on that today, and I just realized if the world is insane, it's largely because we are insane. And so basically, through what I do with unlearning is to try and get those insane thoughts that are in our heads produced in there through systematic forms of education and inculcation, both in schools and in the workplace, and just through our loved ones who don't know better either, and to try and get those insane thoughts out of our heads so that the world could indeed become a sane place. But the problem is that everyone thinks that they're sane and everyone else is crazy. You know, and we have to stop that that fractionalism, that us versus them, and we have to see that we really do play a tremendous part in what the world looks like. So I would just echo what Dr. Rice was saying there, and I would basically say that the call here that I think that we're all going to emphasize tonight is about human empowerment. You know, there's what's going on the earth today is nothing new to what's been going on all the time on Earth. Welcome to another day on, you know, the wild, wacky planet Earth. There have been calamities and wars, rumors of wars, and everything under the sun. And we as human beings have experienced them all in our thousands or millions of years of history on this planet. This one just has a particular shade of technology, a particular shade of ominousness, but I think that's largely because we're about to face a tremendous breakthrough. You know, when you have to throw up after you've been out drinking or you're feeling nauseous, there's that quakiness in your body about what has to come in order to feel better. And I say that anxiety that we feel around the world today is that quakiness. We are about to have this big vomit, this big upheaval of a lot of bad things that are inside of us. But at the end, on the other side of that, is a tremendously healthy feeling. And from that feeling, we can create a tremendously different world.
I like the way you phrased that, Patrick, when you said these bad things that are inside of us. You easily could have said, you know, those bad things that are, you know, in New Orleans, but you didn't phrase it that way.
No.
And I assume that that's your point.
Yes.
Well, this is Michael. Mark. Rather than dividing the world into the sane and unsane, I would rather divide the world into the understood and the not yet understood. Most of the things... There's a famous thing, is grant me the courage to change the things I can, you know, the with patience to accept the things I cannot change. And as we grow up, one of the things that we do is learn different skills. And every time we learn another skill, it gives us the ability to change another aspect of our environment. And whenever there is an emergency, people divide into two groups, those that fall to their knees and start crying that the sky is falling, and those that jump in and put out the fire and rescue the cat in the tree and, you know, save the baby, and do that all just automatically in stride. And the goal, I think, of this, you know, session is to help people, you know, point themselves in the direction of being the rescuer rather than the victim. And it's really very simple. As a Boy Scout for 12 years, I know that the motto is be prepared. And as we go through life, we can anticipate what could happen. And if we are prepared for it, we can avoid panic because we have studied the situation. We understand what could happen. We understand the proper responses to it. And so if you're in the kitchen and the stove catches on fire and you've already been prepared and you've got the fire extinguisher there and you've been trained how to use it, there's no reason to panic because you know exactly what your course of action should be. It is for those of us who have not anticipated what could go wrong, we have not prepared ourselves, and we don't understand the situation. When something bad happens, we are faced with an unknown, a vast unknown which is potentially dangerous to us. And because we don't know how to respond properly, you know, the end result is panic, and we kind of stamp our feet, shake our hands, and go, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. The cure for that is that before the tragedy or the emergency happens, is to become very well prepared.
This is easy, and I would totally agree with that. And there's actually a little model out there on prevention about crisis stressors and coping skills and how we as human beings perceive a situation or a crisis, and actually looking out ahead, looking on the front end for those situations or perceived crises and identifying them and knowing what will come, what will happen with that crisis or transition, and then being prepared, knowing what to expect, asking questions ahead of time, what resources will we have available to us? Internal resources and external, and the community, you know, what type of the support do we have? And then moving ahead in a positive manner with all those elements integrated. So I would totally agree with from a prevention standpoint.
Is Gigi breaking up for any of you?
That was fairly garbled for me.
Okay.
Gigi, are you just on a regular phone, or are you on a speaker phone or anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you got a lot of... Can you call back in?
Yeah, I sure will.
Because, I heard you okay, but it's certainly...
I will call.
Just keep moving. All right. Okay. Well, let me just summarize some of what everybody just said. Replacing victimhood... Replacing an attitude of victimhood with an attitude of empowerment. And certainly the knowledge part of this is highly significant in terms of, you know, we got these horrible things going on in the world. I don't believe it serves any useful purpose for us to turn away from the horrible things that are happening in the world. I think it's important for us to paraphrase what Michael Banerik was saying, as far as being prepared and as far as understanding. It's important for us to understand and to be aware of what's going on in the world, even if it's, you know, terrible stuff, you know, the New World Order or, you know, whatever it might be. But then once we understand it, and I remember once Patrick Mooney made this point way back when about 9/11. He said, once we understand things like 9/11, you know, once we understand, you know, the global elite, if we can call them that, once we understand, you know, their agenda and the whole creating a world government agenda and those sorts of things, robbing us of our freedom. Once we understand it, we really don't need to spend a whole lot more time on it. We don't need to dwell on it. We don't need to wallow in it. We don't need to get addicted to it. We don't need to be entertained by it. We don't need to be distracted by it. Because once we understand it, we need to look in a different direction and begin the whole process of, you know, if they're creating a crummy world, what we need to do then is focus on creating a better world. So in other words, we need to spin our own vortexes here, create our own hurricanes here, and look in a different direction rather than, you know, wallowing in the negativity or wallowing in the doomsday. I get a lot of emails, folks, and I, every time I get, so here goes more of this doomsday stuff. It's on and on and on, and I think, hey, you know, I don't want to go there. I understand a lot of the stuff that's going on, and I just don't need to dwell on that because I focus on, you know, creating a better world. Comments on that?
This is Gigi. I'd like to try again. Can you hear me all right?
You sound much better. Much better.
Okay, excellent.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I wanted to build on what you're saying, Zach, that problems and crises, we can look at them as awareness tools. They may be indicators of what needs to be envisioned. And envisioning solutions to the problems as they're unfolding rather than being the reactive mode. So instead, envision and then actively support what is needed.
Okay, great. Anybody else like to comment on my kind of trying to pull together the threads of what everybody
was saying? I thought you did a great job.
Well, thank you very much.
I have a couple of thoughts, and one is that Michael Rice again, is that there's an internal corollary to every external event, and when we think in terms of somebody who can take away our power, I question whether that even exists, if that's possible. However, when the internal event of denying my power happens and denying my responsibility for what happens in my life
comes along and that happens in the collective mind, then somebody, some other part of the collective mind shows up and says, oh, you don't want to take your power? You don't want to be responsible for your life or for what's happening? Fine, we'll take your life over. We'll become the totalitarian control of your life. And so we move from that desire not to be responsible into someone else taking responsibility for us. And, of course, when that happens, the cost is always pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Amen, doctor.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Yeah, and also, there's a parable that I kind of like to use that to me opens the space up to start to differentiate between the internal and the external. And I tell a story about it. Imagine a primitive coming from the jungles of South America, and we have a large screen upon which we project a table, and there's a bottle on the table. And our primitive, you know, even though it's nothing more than a dugout canoe, that's all he's ever seen, the most complex thing he's ever seen. And we sit him down in front of this projector, which happens to be a large white screen on a concrete wall. And we invite him to move the bottle from one side of the table to the other. Now, we know that there's a projector booth back there and that there's a bottle sitting on a table, but he has no idea of any of that kind of stuff. He has no idea of cause. He just sees the bottle and figures, gee, I get my reward if I just move the bottle. And, of course, walks over to the 3D image of the table on the screen and tries to move the bottle, and it's immovable. We hand him a jackhammer, and he punches a hole in the wall where the bottle sits, but the bottle still doesn't move. And imagine that, you know, after he's all and, you know, the hole has been punched in the wall, you come and ask him what he's trying to do, and he explains he's trying to move the bottle from one side of the table to the other, and you offer him a nice cool drink of water, have him sit down, and go out of the room back to where the projector booth is. And you have the key, you walk in, and you turn the key, you open the door, you pick up the bottle and move it from one side of the room to the table to the other. And when you come back in the room, he's like, you know, a miracle worker. You weren't even in the room and you did what I couldn't do with all of my powers. Let me fall down and worship you. And, of course, knowing simply that you know where cause is and how it works, you might say something to him like, no, no, don't fall on your knees and worship me. The things I do, you can do, and even greater things. You just got to know how the system works. But when you start talking to people who don't know how the system works, and they're in blame of someone else for what's going on in their lives, and they first hear responsibility, like the fellow the other night on that call on Tuesday night, Jack, when they really start to hear responsibility, they don't hear responsibility. They hear, you mean I'm to blame? This is my fault? Or with the people in New Orleans, what he heard Patricia saying was, it was their fault. And rather than responsibility, what that mind hears is guilt. It's my fault. I'm guilty. I'm to blame. I'm bad. I'm wrong. Oh, no. And in the word responsibility, there's nothing about guilt, fault, blame, bad, wrong. It's just there's a part of me playing in everything that happens in my life. And if that part is a painful part, then the painful experiences show up in my life. And when I start to look inside at where the real source of the pain is, I'm going to have a little bit of pain and trauma as I start to take hold of that and move it from one side of the table to the other. But I can do that, and as I acquire the skills, I'm going to be able to go there and take more and more responsibility. But for one who doesn't have the brain cells for even the possibility of that, they can't conceive of anything more than, well, let's go make war on those bad guys. Let's condemn them. Let's have vengeance here. Rather than, with the empowerment of love, I take responsibility for my creation, I change it, and the people who've been cooperating with me, all of a sudden, they tend to start to change because I've changed cause in me, and in so doing, I call forward something different from the universe.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So this is Michael Bednarik, and I cherish both of my parents who are fortunately still alive because they taught my brothers and I responsibility. I mean, as we were growing up, every time we wanted to ride our bike a little bit further or do some other activity, it was understood that you had to assume another responsibility, either take the garbage out, cut the grass. And I cherish the responsibility. In my Constitution class, I tell people that rights and responsibilities are opposite sides of the same coin. And you cannot have one without the other. And that as a skydiving instructor, I offer my students, a single guess. I said, who do you think packs my parachute? And they all laugh because the answer is fairly obvious. when I jump out of a perfectly good airplane, you know, at some point, I'm going to hit the ground. Hopefully, it will be with an open parachute. If I want to make sure that that parachute opens properly every single time, I take the responsibility of packing it. I will not share that responsibility with someone else. And I think that what we need to do in general is to help people understand that responsibility is not blame. It is responsibility, and it goes directly with, you know, exercising your rights and, you know, the comfort. And I continue to ask my students, who's responsible for putting food in your mouth? Well, you are. Who's responsible for putting shelter over your head? Well, you are. I say, well, who's responsible for saving money for your retirement? And the answer again is, you are. Unfortunately, our parents and grandparents were silly enough to give that responsibility to the government. And now that they are on Social Security, you know, no one feels secure because the government has done a really bad job of being responsible for your retirement. So if we can help people to understand that responsibility is not a bad thing, it is not blame, it is, you know, taking control over your life. It is being responsible for how happy you are. It is being responsible for how much money you've saved. And it's being responsible for packing your parachute so that you can do another skydive.
I think responsibility is the first step toward, I can't remember which one of you, I think it was Michael Rice talked about, nobody can take away my power. Responsibility is really the first step in becoming empowered. You're taking responsibility, and that's step numero uno. It's so basic, so fundamental.
One of the other things, with Michael Rice again, one of the other things I think that the reason why people misinterpret responsibility is guilt, fault, blame, and such, is because responsibility also starts to show us, it's a tool that brings to awareness the parts of us that we've been denying and hiding from ourselves. And they're usually the painful parts. So people tend, if they don't know the power of responsibility, to recoil from it because it starts to show them things they've never wanted to look at. It literally, when we deny something, it's responsibility that allows us to bring that back from the unconscious level of ourselves and into awareness where it can be changed. So there's oftentimes making the transition from the guilt, fault, blame to the real thing of responsibility holds that challenge of having to look at parts of ourselves that have been hidden for sometimes not even just ourselves, but literally the generations that we come from, that those things have been hidden and we have to start to look at them and deal with them. It's not always off the field then.
Why is this happening to me again?
There you go. Well, and you know, you go back and there's a very, very old parable for it, and it was a story about the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, and they said that the old generation had to die off, and if you look back, the root of that word generation is genari, it means cause. It doesn't mean that everybody in old physical bodies has to physically die. It means that in order to enter what was called the promised land, the land of conscious co-creation, all of the old causes held from all the generations have to be forgiven, have to be, as Patrick says, unlearned.
Mm-hmm. Comment, if you will, guys. Before we shift and talk more specifically about fear and what causes it and plus tools for eliminating our fears, I'd be interested in hearing what any of you have to say about Patrick referred to this breakthrough, this monumental breakthrough that is upon us. And what do you guys think about the Great Shift? What do you guys think about 2012? What do you guys think about this opportunity or this challenge, is how I see it, of creating a new paradigm? What do you think about all that stuff? Who, anybody, just jump out and...
Well, Michael Rice here, and my offering is that the whole doomsday scenario has been misinterpreted as some kind of physical phenomenon, but ultimately the end of the world is going to be the end of that insane mind, that, and I define the insane mind as a loveless mind, where we start to step into the place where our power is, and that is the place of love, the connectedness to love. And as we do that, the old world starts to pass away. It starts to dissipate and disappear. It doesn't mean physical calamity, although there can be some of that, the release process, the physical calamity go on. That's the processing through what needs to be let go of for a new possibility to show up.
Okay. Anybody else? Is that Patrick Mooney?
Yeah.
Okay.
And basically, I would say, most of the people who know the work on my website know that, I see religions as part of the trap, but I also recognize, having come from a very religious upbringing, that, it's a double-edged sword. There's also some very, very positive things that we can peel away from them. And, the thing that always attracted me about my Christianity when I was a Christian was the teaching about the kingdom of heaven. And what made the kingdom of heaven so real to me and so exciting to me was that I did not have to wait to die and be judged in order for that kingdom to become a reality in my life. All it took was for me to take on faith, the fact that I had the same God-given power as my father or my brother, who I took as Jesus Christ at the time, and I just had to go out and live that. And that was salvation, and it did not require the whole world waiting for this rapture. It did not require the whole world accepting Jesus as their personal Savior. It began the moment that you decided that you were to accept God's promise on faith, and you were going to begin to act like that in your life. And it's that same kind of thing, even though I know you no longer use the Christian language to kind of get that point across. It's a valid point that transcends all religions and all cultures. Is that the salvation or the new world or the golden age that we all want starts the moment you say it's present in yourself and you begin to live what that world looks like. In other words, you don't tolerate abuses of power against yourself and others. You learn to empower yourself so that you are prepared to face all challenges. You delve into your mystical side so that death no longer scares you. You just share. And you start to believe in abundance instead of scarcity. Scarcity is one of the most insane thoughts that we're all plugged into. And the magicians that run the world are great at crafting this spell of scarcity over us. And once you see that it's just a spell, that it's just a choice, the new world is born that instant. And then the rest of the time, it's just a growing, growing, growing in your own power, in your own ability to change and influence. And the more you put into that, it's just like exercising your muscles. The more you put into it, or your brain or anything else, the more you're able to put out. And that's all I think we're all interested in, is getting people to just move away from that point of getting other people to agree with us, getting other people to wake up. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. It would be nice if everyone did think the same way that we did. It would be nice if everybody saw the things that we saw. But the bottom line is that you cannot count on that. The only thing you can count on is doing it yourself. That's why the biggest and most central question of my work is, whose life are you living? Stop waiting for other people to validate you and go ahead and do it yourself.
Okay. Patrick, that point of scarcity in the ancient Aramaic, in the scriptures where they talk about, man falling from grace, that can be properly translated as, we forgot how to live in abundance. And when people forget how to live in abundance, there'll be plenty of people who'll be glad to just jump right in there and scam their abundance off the top. There's a chapter in our book called Choosing Teachers, and we've got two kind of teachers. We've got the priest craft, who will use the exact same teachings to scam people and take their wealth, take their power, take control of their genitals, take control of their political vote. And then there are those who will use exactly the same words and exactly the same teachings. And they're called the priesthood, and they're there to support people in their aliveness, their abundance, their being empowered. And it's just a matter of which way it's used. The principles identical throughout the creation, whether you speak it in psychological language or physics or theological, whatever, the principle is identical. And in every arena, there will always be those who are priesthood and priestcraft, those who will use it to suppress and those who will use it to empower.
So are you calling us a bunch of hoods?
if you take people's power and give it back to them, if you assist them in recovering it, that's it exactly. Yeah, that's the real priesthood. And it happens in education, it happens in business, it happens in government. But then, of course, also those who don't know the source of their abundance being within are the ones who practice the craft, and they will, in business, in government, in education, in religion, they'll take all the power they can get from everybody they can get because they've forgotten the source of it within them.
Patrick of a bunch of hoods. Is that how the Jesuits refer to it? A bunch of hoods.
Yankees are the Catholic kids. The phonic education money combined for a small total of $13,000,000.47.
How does Strom Thurmond get on the line? Mute him. All right, well, it's interesting, the depth of the positivity that I hear from you people, it's interesting. I can't even get you to talk about the shift. I can't even get you to talk about the new paradigm. I can't even get you to talk about the new world order. Because as far as you guys are concerned, it's all about now, mm-hmm. and it's all about creating it now. So, and as far as you guys are concerned, it's already happening.
So, wasn't there a guy a couple thousand years ago that said something like that? The kingdom of heaven is here and now, and it's within you. And you can do the same thing. Wasn't that all said a couple thousand years ago? It's like, what are we waiting for, folks?
Let's talk a little bit about some of the emotions involved here that that people are experiencing, and let's talk about negativity, fear, panic, and let's just what are these things, let me put this forward in the form of a specific question. The person that I don't remember which one of you said it earlier, but I think it was Michael Bednar. The person who responds to a crisis with an attitude of victimhood versus the person who responds to a crisis with an attitude or with a response of courage. What's the difference between those two people? What's the difference between somebody who is overwhelmed by fear in a crisis versus somebody who experiences that crisis as a challenge and for whom it brings out the best in them?
Ultimately, again, this is Michael, I would say the difference ultimately is I can versus I can't. The person who is the rescuer knows that, good things can happen, that you have to do the right thing the first time. If you are genuinely in an emergency, you don't have an opportunity to try multiple choices that are wrong and discover it. You have to know the right answer, and you have to do it right now. And the only way that you can have that kind of knowledge and have that kind of confidence is with training and prior planning to anticipate the future and to prepare yourself for it. As a young college student, I very rapidly became an advanced first aid instructor. And one of the first rules that I was taught was that we have to establish confidence by demonstrating competence. If you have a first aid victim and you come running up and go, "Oh my gosh, which bandage do I use? Okay, don't panic. I'm going to get the person is going to just have a heart attack, before they have a chance to bleed to death." And so we were taught explicitly. Even if you don't know the right answer, pretend like you do. Walk in very calm, go, "Excuse me, what's your name? I have everything under control." And on the inside, you can be as panicky as you want. You go, "Oh my God, I can't remember how to tie a triangular bandage." But on the outside, you have to project confidence. And simply by doing that, your victim will automatically relax and go, "Oh gosh, the crisis is over because someone who knows what to do is here." And everything that I've done in my entire life, being an advanced first aid instructor, the first rule is don't panic. As a scuba instructor, if you're 50 feet underwater and you run out of air, the first rule is don't panic. As a skydiving instructor, guess what the first rule is? Don't panic. At 120 miles an hour, you only have a certain number of seconds to, find the ripcord and solve the problem. And it is a habit that you can develop. And, I am literally at a stage in my life when I truly, sincerely believe that I cannot panic. If there is an emergency, my body automatically the blood runs cold. I go into almost robotic mode, analyzing the situation to decide what is the correct answer and how quickly can I do it? And then after the emergency is over, then I may come a little bit unglued. Oh my gosh, I mean, this is what I lived through. But during the moment of the emergency, I have trained myself to relax, analyze, and then execute. And that's something that I have been trained. It's something people can learn. But first of all, you have to want to learn it. I mean, which do you choose to be, the rescuer or the victim? Well, if you want to be the rescuer, you're going to have to learn the first aid. You're going to have to learn the CPR. You're going to have to learn, you know, the situations that you want. Do you want to be the rescuer in?
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's really loaded, Michael. You really said a lot there in a relatively brief period of time as far as everything that was in there. Who else would like to comment?
I have something to add, Jack.
Sure.
Basically, too, the other thing about I find really empowering is in these crisis scenarios about the new world order and everything else, that natural disasters and earthships and all those other things that may come, is that there is a possibility that situations will come across that we have totally no preparedness for. But in those situations, I still find that if you have a perspective about life that is greater than your physical body, then the decision in every moment, whether you know what's going on or not, is what is the internal state that I want to choose to operate from in this situation? Do I want to operate from a sense of ignorance and a sense of panic? Or do I want to operate from a sense of strength, a sense of trust, a sense of power? And that simple choice right there will lead you into recognizing synchronicities in the situation that will lead to your destiny. But success is not always surviving. To me, success is living your life on your terms, whether you live that life for 10 years, 15 years, 30 years, or 100 years. That's the goal for me, from my perspective, is to live each day, each situation, from an empowered place of quality. And you know what? If you stand up for your truth, if you stand up for your power, you may not live a long time. You know, this earth has a history of showing empowered humans to the door very quickly. But that's nothing to be feared. Look at that as, oh, I'm just graduating a little earlier than I thought. And if you can pull that kind of resource into your toolbox of perception, I think whether you have the technical knowledge to survive a situation or not is good, but it's not as important as having the spiritual knowledge and capacity to face every situation from a place of power and trust.
You know, when you look at the whole thing in the terms of, and I know I'm kind of blending models here, but when you look at the whole thing in terms of warfare, when I think of an army of spiritual warriors, that becomes a very, very formidable army. You know, it's a bunch of spiritual warriors who embody a lot of the principles you just talked about, Patrick. And I really believe that, you know, that there's a battle between good and evil going on right now. And in order for those of us who are good to persevere, it's necessary for this spiritual warrior aspect of us to become embodied. And I really think that's the key to the whole thing, Patrick. And you kind of tugged at my heartstrings there, really, in terms of everything that you just said.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, you're in the body, you're not in the body. There's great truths that are there. There's great reasons to be in the body. There's great reasons to be out of the body. But it's not to fear any of that. You know, we talk about an afterlife, but there really is no afterlife. It's a continuum. It's moving from one room to another. And in any room, no matter where you are, you want to be true to your highest vision about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree. I'd miss Michael Rice, and I'd call that real personal power, and the person who can be continuously aware of and function out of their highest power, their highest guidance, is the one that has real personal power. And that's not very common in the world, because most people in the world clamor for strength and aren't really interested in that level of power. And Jack, your original question on what's the difference, whether people respond with empowerment or respond with fear, to me, the bottom line is, what's the content of their mind? whatever situation comes along is going to tend to resonate in their minds, whatever reality they hold, and we kind of cycle back once again to responsibility. We live in a world, and the person who gets to set the conversation or the tone of the conversation really tends to run the game. And so we have a world that has a language that's based in projection. You know, if you listen to the average person, you made me angry, you made me sad, you made me afraid, you made me this, and that places all the power outside of us. And until we can actually take responsibility, yeah, some people do some crazy things in the world, but the crazy things that people do don't cause the state of my mind. I cause the state of my mind, and what shows up in my mind always tells me more about the content of my mind than the world I think I'm looking at. And so, let's say, Jack, you and I had a conflict, and in the world's language, I'd say, well, Jack, you know, you really made me angry. That really teased me. And that leads me communicating to you that I think that you should change my mind, which, of course, is ludicrous. And the world does not even contain at this stage, or at least it's starting to develop and come from a few sources, but doesn't even contain responsibility language. If you and I had a conflict and anger came up for me and I actually used responsibility language, which literally changes the output of my mind, I'd be saying, gee, Jack, you know, you said that, and so that brought a lot of anger up in me, and I'd like to be finished with my anger. Would you be on my support team for cleaning that up? And all of a sudden, I'm going to start to see the whole internal structure of my mind differently, simply because I've moved from that projection of what's going on to my mind, in my mind, to responsibility for what's going on in my mind. And, you know, I oftentimes will ask in my seminars, and I've asked tens of thousands of people this question, I never get anybody that says yes, but I'll say, how many here have ever read a book, seen a play, watched a movie, seen a television show, been in an educational institution or a religious institution, where two people were in conflict and one turned to the other and said, gee, you know, when you said thus and so, that brought up fear for me, and I'd really like to clean up my fear. Would you support me? And, of course, everybody laughed, because hardly anybody's ever seen actual responsibility language in the world. And our language dictates the output of our minds. And so if we're stuck with projection language, we're going to be stuck with projecting what's internal to us. And so if I have fear about what's going on in the world, and I pretend the world made me afraid, I can't change my fear-based mind. And the world's specialty is to shift us from love-based beings to fear-based minds. And our work, if we're going to really do it, is to shift out of fear-based minds into love beings. And language and responsibility, to me, are two of the big keys. And so when I can see that, this situation brings up fear in me, and then the ancient Aramaic idea of forgiveness, when you mention tools, does not mean anything about letting somebody else off the hook for what's going on in my mind. Forgiveness is the tool I use to change what's happening in my mind. And so if the world delivers to me a situation that brings up fear, and I know how to forgive, because that fear has surfaced in me, I'm going to change that reality in my mind. I'm going to forgive it. And in so doing, I'm going to literally disable my mind's ability to produce a reality called fear. Once I do that, there is no circumstance that can, quote-unquote, appear to frighten me any longer. And I'll stand in a whole different stead than the one who believes that it's all the world's fault that they're feeling what they're feeling. Because the world can't cause anything inside of you except what's already inside of you. And forgiveness is about dumping what doesn't belong inside of human beings and taking us back to who we are.
You know, in listening to you guys tonight, it's for many people, I'm certain that this topic, that what we're talking about is very, you know, complicated and complex and hard to, you know, and hard to grasp. But yet, on the same, by the same token, you know, most of what we're talking about here tonight, this all really boils down to a lot of very simple and self-evident things. And we've been talking now for almost an hour, and essentially, you know, we're going to be talking about tools for managing fear in a second here, in terms of how to learn these things, which I think is another also very important aspect of this topic. But basically, guys, this is also simple. And on another level, it's also simple and self-evident that we're that all of us, all four of us, are just kind of repeating the same thing over and over and over again. You know, it all boils down to such simple internal factors as opposed to external factors, and you know, taking responsibility and all these other very, very basic and fundamental things. That the question of and then on that basis, all of a sudden there is no more here. It's in there. You know, on the basis of that internal state, the internal state that we're talking about.
The fear's still there, Jack. I mean, it shows from time to time. I mean, we're all human. We all have feelings. It's just that we have to, you just recognize it. You just don't let it overwhelm you. You know, you take a beauty break, and you tap back into your power, and then you enter the arena again.
Uh-huh. One of my favorite
actions. How does this fit, Gigi, for you as a naturopath? I know my background's in naturopathy also, and a lot of these ideas to me are just so consistent. And how does that fit from your practice of naturopathy?
Well, it fits perfectly with what we would call the natural laws, because crisis with patients many times is actually reinterpret what crisis means. It's merely transformation. Transformation and one of the greatest opportunities for growth, and we can choose that path, growth. And at other times, we may be in balance, in a state of homeostasis, is what we call it as naturopaths. And when we're in that state, everything feels good, it's fine, but really there's little growth being experienced. So whenever we feel that twinge, whenever we fear is brought up, that means, all right, there's something else to look at, we get to go a state deeper, spiritually, physically, emotionally.
Mm-hmm. My state of homeostasis is constant change.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If things aren't changing and moving rapidly, then I know that something is wrong.
Exactly.
Should we open up the lines for questions? I sense that there are people out there that may want to ask specific questions.
Before we do that, what I would like to do, Michael, is I want to talk about tools. I want to talk about tools to... And like, for example, when you were talking about when you made the last statement that you made, you talked about when you're in a situation when you're challenging a situation, don't panic, and that you simply at that point that you would simply relax, and that state of mind, that attitude of yours of relaxing, in that situation, had become natural to you. It's become a habit. So let's talk about how we can develop these attitudes we're talking about, how we can develop these internal states we're talking about. And I know Michael Rice has got a bunch of tools, and I have a feeling we all probably have some tools that we can share with our audience in terms of, how do we learn how to do these things? You, Michael Babnarek, for example, how did you learn how to relax in the way that you described?
Little steps at a time. I became an advanced first aid instructor, then a CPR instructor, scuba instructor. I go mountain climbing, sailing, and it was just the life process of being responsible. You know, becoming a Boy Scout, the first camping trip I ever took, I spent all day Saturday and all day Sunday, realized Mom is not here to make me a sandwich. And all of a sudden, I realized that the first merit badge I need was the cooking merit badge, because I'm not going to go hungry. If Mom's not here to feed me, then I'm responsible. I have to, to feed myself. Fear is a symptom of ignorance. If you don't know how to swim, then you're going to be afraid of the water. Once you learn how to swim, then the swimming pool and the ocean are just really cool places that you can go with your friends. So when anyone is afraid of anything, they should first of all recognize that, there's something here that you need to learn and figure out the best way to learn it. I used to tell people that I wasn't afraid of anything. Well, it was 98% true. I wasn't afraid of anything except falling. And I decided finally that I needed to learn about falling. And the best way that I could think of to do that was to skydive. And I was only going to make one skydive. I was going to go out one weekend and do it, and I was going to do it just to prove to myself that I could do that, even if there was this, state of fear involved. And The result was that I landed on the ground. I was incoherent for 45 minutes, talking about how wonderful my first skydive was, and I went back to the airport 50 out of 52 weekends the first year. So it's practice. Practice, but you got to know what it is that you're practicing, and it's just becoming competent. The more things or skills that you are competent in, the more relaxed you'll be, the more situations you'll realize you can deal with.
Right, you really said a lot again. So one aspect of this learning that you're talking about and this practicing that you're talking about, Michael, and also this continuous challenge that your own life has become, is just simply a function of you experiencing your life and experiencing it as fully as you possibly can. And on the basis of the richness and fullness of that experience, you're practicing, you're learning, and you're just becoming more competent. And as a result, you know, you're mastering life, basically. And on that basis, you're less fearful.
Yeah. I mean, in many times, well, there was a moment in my life when I was leaving for a project. My company was sending me to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I was going to be there for over a year. And I packed the car, and, you know, the night before, I slept like a baby. I was going on a new adventure. I couldn't wait to wake up and leave on this new adventure, whereas my mother and my brother tossed and turned all night. They were worried that I was going to get lost because I had never been to Pittsburgh before. And my response to them was, well, I've never not found it before. I mean, they were living on the assumption that in traveling, you know, several hundred miles, I was bound to get lost. You know, they were automatically thinking about the possibility of failure, whereas I didn't think about the possibility of failure. I mean, I was a Boy Scout. I knew how to follow a map. I was right down the freeway. I mean, all I had to do was get off at a certain exit, you know. And so it's this anticipation of either failure or success. And, you know, I think that people will be a lot more successful if they anticipate success rather than anticipating failure. You know, a lot of human nature is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you can't, you are absolutely right. The other thing is also true. If you think that you can, you know, there's a much, much greater chance that you will be successful. And I've told people I have never experienced failure, only delayed successes.
Excellent. Who else would like to comment on tools for learning these things and implementing these things?
Well, I think another essential tool right at the immediate crisis point is, well, what do people do when they're fearful? They hold breath. They stop breathing. You know, there are many physiological changes that happen. So a real physical state of consciousness, I think, is so important, you know, right at the peak of fear or crisis. And once a person practices breathing, breath work, more intentional breath work, one can think better, you know, one's emotional capacity begin to fill. As I said, there are all kinds of physiological changes that occur in the body that are barriers unless people really understand how to breathe through fear and become conscious.
I know that's something, Michael Rice, that you also, it's one of your tools, is it not?
Yeah, still point breathing is a big key, and as I see it, what happens when we hold the breath is that's the mechanism of denial. That's how we literally hide the things from ourselves that we don't want to deal with, and so we create an artificial division in the mind that gives us an unconscious mind. And in the ancient teachings, the unconscious mind was called the heart, and you know, we couldn't even translate that word out of the Aramaic until just a few decades ago when Freud rediscovered the unconscious. So when they said, take care of the heart for all the issues of life, they were saying, watch what you hide away in your unconscious because that's what you're going to set up next, and it's coming to bite you. And if you blame it when it comes to bite you, you still won't be able to find that hidden in your own heart. You'll keep functioning out of that unconscious dynamic or whatever stored in your physiology. And in your physiology is the past and is the mind of the past. And what happens is that mind just keeps repeating its scenarios over and over and over. again, go back to the what we would call the priesthood teaching on the truth of what was in the original scriptures, and you hear them saying, you know, you've got to live in the mind of Christ. And that wasn't a religious thing. They were saying, don't live in the mind of your body. Don't live in Adamos, the red clay. All that holds is the past. There is another mind available to you, and that other mind is the one that the Christed beings use. And when you go there, you have all the empowerment that the world has got to offer. But you've got to deal with your own unconscious dynamic first. And I agree with you, Gigi. Opening the breath is how you get to clear out, how you get to look at what those unconscious dynamics are and bring them from the heart to what, again, in the ancient teachings is called the altar. The ancient name of the conscious mind is the altar, A-L-T-E-R. That's where we can alter or change the unconscious dynamics. But when you're holding the breath, you can't change it because you don't see it.
Okay. Other tools that anybody would like to share?
I got one, Jack.
Okay.
Basically, I come from, I'm the youngest of five boys in a working class background, and I was a very, very small kid, and, you know, very emaciated, and, you know, felt like a weakling most of my life until I started to, but there was always a sense in me that, for me, it's my own sense of empowerment. I like to take on big challenges. You know, if I was playing football, I got a big rush out of tackling the biggest kid on the field and walking away, you know, without a scratch, you know, trying to do when I figured out that the world was full of a lot of insane thoughts and I was a high school teacher, I walked away from it without knowing what I was going to jump into. And, you know, I managed to land, you know, creating this institute of unlearning and having a good time with it. And then now that I'm unlearned, I've taken on pretty much a, you know, even bigger challenge of, you know, getting the government to respond and play by the rules it says it plays by instead of pretending that it's playing by them. So I'm taking on the IRS right now, and I'm encouraging everybody to embrace the work of Peter Henderson, who wrote a book called Cracking the Code. I've put out a DVD, you know, that talks about my my results with that, and also as well as creating some other perceptual tools that we talked about, maybe priesthood or priestcraft, how the priestcraft uses these perceptual tools to enslave our consciousness, but how we can use these tools to empower our consciousness as well. And, you know, it revolves around the simple term of magic. And the only thing I could say is that, you know, magic is a sophisticated reality in this world, and it does have some power. And the more that we learn to tap into what is known as the magic or the occult, and we become less afraid of these things, there are some tools in those kinds of teachings that teach us to really tap into our God-given, our Christed power, whatever way you want to determine that. But I challenge people, what I try to do is unlearning. It's not just enough to say that you're unlearned. You know, you've got to get the story, but the second part of unlearning is empowerment. So the only way you're going to get empowered is to tackle things and situations that are a little bit bigger than you, that push your fear button. For example, try and open up a bank account in this country, a non-interest bearing account, without your social security number. Walk into your bank and try and do that. There's a whole educational experience behind that. You know, I challenge people to do these things. You know, it's, you may not always succeed, but there's a growing sense of your own, what you're capable of. You have, your knowledge has to be sharp. You'll find your weaknesses very quickly. So I think it's not just enough. Too many of us in these alternative circles are sitting back and patting ourselves on the back that we know enough about the New World Order, and so that makes us better than everybody else. And knowledge is not enough in this case. It's more about challenging yourself and challenging the world to live to a higher standard and a higher vision, and then flesh out what those details are in the course of your everyday life.
So you just said something there I really like, Patrick. So you don't wait for challenge. You create challenge.
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I think Michael Babarek's statement about his life being a continuous, you know, one challenge after another is kind of in line with that.
Yeah, it's important though. Sometimes, you know, like you can get a little crazy with it. I mean, it is important to take some time to rest and chill out and find balance. You know, I think Gigi would agree with that too. That, you know, you can only stretch your body so much before it breaks down on you. And it's the same thing too with your mind, and it's the same thing too. You can only push yourself so far before you need to just pull back at times, and we each have to be responsible for pushing our limits, but also knowing when to give ourselves a break, to give ourselves time to grow in order to challenge and face those limits much easier than the second time around or third time around.
Mm-hmm. But that's no longer true after you've run for president of the United States.
Yeah, I can imagine. There's not too many things else.
Other people?
Are you going to try that one again, Michael, by the way?
Michael, go ahead.
Are you going to go for that one again, Michael?
I'm currently running for Congress in District 10 of Texas, and I plan to win and become the first Libertarian in Congress. And that's going to change the course of American politics, and I'll make a decision about 2008 after I'm in Congress.
Well, we'll support you in both.
Well, thank you. I would like to invite everyone to my open house and ice cream social. I know Austin, Texas is probably a long distance from where everybody is, but you're still welcome to show up on September 18th, which is a Sunday. We'll be open from noon until midnight, and you can come and visit, and we'll give you free ice cream and hopefully bumper stickers and business cards.
May I throw in a couple of additional tools here, and then we'll open up the lines. And a lot of this is going to be just a summation, but essentially, just to extract much of what all of you said was the real key to all this here, in terms of overcoming fear or managing any emotion, any negative emotion, to use those words, you know, anger, fear, jealousy, hatred, you name it. It basically all revolves around us developing our full potential and becoming the most that we can possibly be. And that involves the whole process of change. And I think the key to it all is for all of us, all human beings, to make a commitment to that path, to make a commitment to that path. I call it the path of awareness, to make a commitment to the path of personal growth, to make a commitment to being the best that we can possibly be. You know, we don't want to be normal. We want to be exceptional. We want to be, you know, better than good. In other words, to develop our full potential and to get the most out of ourselves. And the essential first step to that is simply making that commitment. I think it's Michael Bednarik who emphasized learning. Making that commitment to learning all the time, every day. And, you know, it's not work. It's fun. Learning is great. Learning is, I can't think of anything I'd rather do with my time than learn. One of my favorite affirmations is from the Castaneda books. Our lot, we are men, and our lot is to learn and to be hurled into inconceivable new worlds. So it's all about learning. And a few of my favorite tools also, in addition to the ones you guys have already mentioned, certainly the breathing is major. I recently experienced a major challenge myself, and I was, you know, embroiled in a lot of the things today. And the challenge is resolved, and it was resolved favorably, and it was resolved very consistently with my vision, but I did a lot of breathing during that period of time. And you know what? It worked. Every time I found my old conditioning rearing its ugly head and going, you're supposed to be doing this, you're supposed to be doing that, you're supposed to be worrying, you're supposed to be this, you're supposed to be that, you're going to die, you're going to blah, blah, blah. I just started breathing, and it went away. And just three other tools that I want to share with you here real briefly as far as being able to realize our full potential, to develop our full potential. One of them is to make a point of doing something to connect with nature every day. Whether it's just sitting and watching the sunrise, or whether it's even breathing can be connecting with nature. To do something every day to connect with nature. To read something inspirational every day is a wonderful way of reconditioning our thoughts, reconditioning our minds, so that we can see the world differently. And it becomes something, every day when I eat my lunch now, I read something inspirational. And I know it's inspirational because I've read it before, most of them. And I love that. I thrive in that moment. And another one of you was Patrick. I think this would fit Patrick's description well. Another one is to make a point every day of doing something different as a means, again, of challenging yourself, stirring things up a bit, and stirring this whole pot of learning that we're talking about. So those are a few of my favorites.
And one I'd like to throw out just kind of a short form on the process of forgiveness as it was taught from the ancient Aramaic and it actually appears on first sight to be an absolutely backward process when you see it from the Aramaic. The word forgive in Aramaic is shebag, and it literally means to cancel. And in order for the mind to produce, to generate a reality, there's some interesting Harvard research that shows that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the maximum amount of information that goes into building our reality is 9 bits. In order for the mind to decide which 9 bits it's going to use, there has to be a driver for that particular reality to appear in the mind. And the driver is the goal we hold for our object of attention. So if I look at something that in my old mindset I said, well, that really frightens me, I have in my mind a content called fear, and I have a goal for that object of attention. I don't care whether it's, you know, Joe Blow or, you know, Katrina or whatever the object of attention is. And as long as I hold that goal for that object of attention, my mind will take its fear, its hostility, whatever it is, and project it into my brain's image of that object of attention. The essence of forgiveness from the Aramaic is to cancel that goal. Even if it's, you know, the most reasonable goal in the world, I want world peace and I'm really peeved because we don't have world peace. Well, I have to cancel my goal for world peace in order to find the part of my mind that generates my anger and my rage. Because my anger and my rage doesn't come from the lack of peace in the world. In fact, my anger and my rage is an internal process that supports war in the world. And so when I cancel the goal that drives my rage, I clear what in the ancient language or in the ancient teachings was called the altar, the conscious mind. And when I clear the conscious mind of that reality, I now have room to bring forward the root and the cause of my rage. And as I start to process through that, I'll get to the point where my mind can no longer produce rage. Then I'll have the same mind from which to go to the world and bring about a different result. That's in just kind of in a nutshell, in a short form, the essence of forgiveness.
All right, thank you. Let's open up the lines here so we can get some input from our audience. All right, the lines are open. Who would like to make a comment or ask a question of any of our guests? Come on out. And if you need to unmute yourself, press 6 on your keypad. Any questions?
No.
Everybody gone to sleep?
We've done it. We've solved all the problems in the world.
Could be, too. I mean, I know that I felt that way a couple of times just listening to you guys. I felt like, wow, this is just, this is it. You know, we're just hitting the nail on the head here. Any comments or questions from any of our guests here? We've got about 10 minutes to go, and please jump out and participate with us. I guess not. I guess we just put a capper on it.
You really did. You know, there was such a wonderful job done tonight. So much was covered, and so much was so understandable and easily digestible. And so I think you didn't. There's nobody out there sitting there that's confused and questioning anything. I think it was very good show tonight,
guys. It's kind of an you know. It's
yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what are we all figuring out?
And we shouldn't be surprised that we were that successful. That was our goal.
Right.
I think in a lot of cases also, you know, we have to remember that on this line, in many cases we're preaching to the choir, people who have been really pretty much plugged in, have heard most of our speakers tonight on different calls, very agreeable where we're coming from. So you don't get a lot of people jumping out because that's what I believe anyway. I think they're just all plugged in.
Yeah, these are not the people who were panicking in the first place.
I mean, it really, really was good. I was so thoroughly entertained. When I got it, I thought, oh, I already know all this stuff. You know, it'll pack it so well. And, you know, I'll watch it just because, you know, I'm his friend and, you know, I want to be courteous. But he just got me. It was very entertaining, and it was really, really wonderful. Patrick, anything else that you'd like to just tell our audience about that you're up to these days as far as anything?
Thanks, Jack. Yeah, the latest phase of my work at the Institute of Unlearning is to ultimately you know, the final dream of it all is to ultimately create a physical classroom space, you know, a physical building or branches of buildings where you know, like minds can come together and not only invent solutions for today's challenges, but also a system of learning, you know, that rivals anything that we put out there today in so-called academia, that really tries to empower people. I was inspired by that by a man named Dingo Swan, who's a famous remote viewer, and he wrote an obscure two-volume series about human power. And he says there really are no schools about human power in the world today. And he makes an excellent point. And so that was something I quickly grafted onto my vision. So in order to implement that vision to its next stage, I started to actually go out and do some public speaking engagements. I did my first one in New Jersey, Montclair, New Jersey, at the end of July, and I'll be speaking again at the New Hope Metaphysical Society in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, September 28th, the end of this month. And out of that first one and the same talk I'll be doing at the end of this month, I created a DVD, which is called Magic, Manifestation, and the Income Tax, A Lesson in Human Power. And it's full of over 2 hours of, I think, very empowering and amusing and essential information that anyone can really tap into and start to apply today. You don't need a major background into the world. I give you a brief one in the video, and you don't really need to understand all that stuff to really apply empowering stuff. So I would just encourage everybody, my whole goal is, you know, with the Institute of Unlearning is not really to make any money off of this. A lot of this is out of my own pocket, but since I don't pay income taxes anymore, I don't mind the expenditures. But I made my videos as low cost as possible. So for a $10 donation to my work, I'd be happy to send you a copy of that in DVD, VHS, you know, in Europe or in the United States. I can make it for most places around the world. But it's to continue to do stuff like that. And, you know, I think, you know, as you kind of attested to, I just try and have fun with it. And I think if you can approach it a little bit lightheartedly, you don't scare people so much.
All right. And Patrick's website is www.unlearning.org, unlearning.org. And do you want to give your email address, Patrick, in case somebody wants to send you an email and order a tape? Or should you just send them to the site?
That information is all on the website, too, but it's pmooney, P-M-O-O-N-E-Y, at unlearning.org.
All right, great. And let's see, who would like, Michael Babarek, why don't you go next in terms of, you know, what's going on and anything?
Well, we are gearing up for November of 2006. We've opened our headquarters here in Austin. We have all the important things, high-speed internet and telephone. And then we're going to go to the less important things like desks and chairs and bookcases and things like that.
Uh-huh.
We have our Texas LP State Convention on Saturday, September 17th, which everyone knows is Constitution Day. And then on Sunday, I'm having my open house. And again, I invite people to visit us in Austin or on the website at badnarik.org, BADNARIK.org. We're keep an eye on us because we are going all the way to Washington this time.
All right. And Michael, as you're hitting the road pretty soon again, aren't you?
I am, yes, actually. People can go to my website, www.whyagain.com. That's whyagain.com. My books are free on the site to download in English, German, Russian, and Spanish. We're working on a couple of other languages, but that's what's up there for now. Most of my tools are there. They're free. They can look at the Kabbalah's manuscript, which is the oldest known copy of the New Testament in Aramaic, which incidentally is a physics language, not a theological language. That manuscript, the whole book is on the website. I'll be up the 1st of October doing a one-day conference called Peak Hour, and it's on creating community, looking at peak oil, alternative energy sources, and alternative healing. And it's in Muskegon, Michigan. Then I'm going to take some time to write, and then starting in December, I'll be touring Florida. My website has my calendar on. I'll be doing a series. All of my travel workshops are done free, so I'll be doing a series in Florida. I'll set out in Merritt Beach, Merritt Island, the first week of December. The next week, I'll be down in Melbourne, then down in Key West the second week in January, and touring Florida the rest of January, February.
All right. And Gigi, how much longer does the kayaking season go? I'm sure you're probably still doing it now because we've got nice weather here still.
1 month. 1 month longer. We'll see what Mother Nature provides here.
All right.
But what we've been doing through the center and our school is offering more on ecology and sustainability courses. Someone just mentioned sustainable energy. We have some great regional and international teachers coming in September and October to northern Wisconsin through the center to teach more about natural medicine. This weekend we have a very talented healer, Isadora Tevens, coming from Jamaica to northern Wisconsin. Can you believe that? And again, a person named Mark Morgan from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association will be teaching about all kinds of alternative green building and energy sources. So we have a lot happening.
All right, why don't you give your phone number again that people can call you and get all the information.
715-967-2300. Thank you.
All right. It's so interesting that there's always, it seems like there's always an overlap between alternative healing and alternative energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a coincidence, is it?
It's
all about energy. We have one keyword, we can just say energy.
Energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all for being here tonight. This was a wonderful presentation. I can't wait to hear the tape once we get our site rolling and get that ready. This is a tape that I will listen to just to glean everything from it I can. Thank you all for being here. I'll definitely be in touch. I consider you all friends of mine and allies in this wonderful, you know, crusade to help people free themselves up and create a better world. So let's keep in touch.
That's the point. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And let me just give Stratius our website also. We need to plug ourselves here in addition. Our temporary website is www.zolamantia.com. That's Z-O-L-A-M-A-N-T-I-A, zolamantia.com. You can purchase our home seminar at a ridiculously low price of $295 at that site. 21 hours of DVD by some of the outstanding educators, similar to what you heard tonight. Of course, not as exceptional as what we had tonight, but very close. I'm just kidding. They're all exceptional. So check it out, and please subscribe to our email list. We're in the process of building that up after our main site crashed a couple of months ago. So we need everybody to resubscribe to our email list, and we'll send you invitations to this call every week, as well as our Tuesday night to Alternative News and Solutions call. Please join us next week on these same calls, and we'll see you then. Have a good night.
Good night.